increase the survival chances of humans in a particular environment. The secure attachment style has worked best because, throughout history, our ancestors lived predominantly in close-knit groups where working together was by far the best way to secure their future and that of their offspring. To ensure the survival of the species under any condition that might arise, however, more than one strategy was called necessary. For those born into hostile conditions in which large numbers perished from hunger, disease, or natural disasters, skills other than collaborative ones became more important. Those individuals who were able to detach and be self-sufficient were more successful at competing for limited resources in these extreme environments, and so a segment of the population leaned toward an avoidant attachment style. Unfortunately, the survival advantages for the human race does not necessarily translate into an advantage for the avoidant individual. Chris McCandless might still be alive if he'd been willing to collaborate with others. In fact, studies show that if you have an avoidant attachment style, you tend to be less happy and satisfied in your relationships. The good news is that it doesn't have to be that way. You don't have to be a slave to evolutionary forces. You can learn what does not come naturally to you and improve your chances at developing a rewarding relationship. Flying solo? It's important to remember that the avoidant attachment style always manifests itself. It determines to a great extent what you expect in relationships, how you interpret romantic situations, and how you behave with your date or partner. Whether you are single or involved in a relationship, even a committed one, you are always maneuvering to keep people at a distance. Susan, who has an avoidant attachment style, describes herself as a free spirit. She gets involved with men, sometimes for more than a year, but then eventually tires of them, moves on to the next conquest, and jokingly refers to the trail of broken hearts she's left behind. She sees need as a weakness and looks down on people who become dependent on their partner, mockingly referring to such situations as jail time. Are Susan and others with avoidant attachment styles simply devoid of the need to meaningfully connect with a significant other? And if so, doesn't that contradict the basic premise of attachment theory, that the need for physical and emotional proximity to a spouse or lover is universal? Answering these questions isn't an easy task. Avoidants are not exactly open books and tend to repress rather than express their emotions. This is where attachment studies come in handy. Sophisticated research methods are able to reach beyond people's conscious motives and succeed where straightforward communication fails in cracking the avoidant mindset. The following set of experiments is particularly revealing. 6 independent studies have examined how accessible attachment issues are to avoidants. They did so by measuring how long it took subjects to report words flashed quickly on a monitor. These tests operated on the well-established premise that the speed with which you report a certain word is indicative of how accessible that theme is in your mind. Researchers found that avoidants are quicker than other people to pick up on words such as need and enmeshed, related to what they consider negative characteristics of their partner's behavior, but slower to recognize words like separation, fight, and loss, associated with their own attachment-related worries. Avoidants, it appears, are quick to think negatively about their partners, seeing them as needy and overly dependent, a major element in their view of relationships, but ignore their own needs and fears about relationships. They seemingly despise others for being needy and are themselves immune to those needs. But is that really the case? In the second part of these studies, researchers distracted the avoidants by giving them another task to perform, like solving a puzzle or responding to another cue, while the word recognition task was going on. In these situations, the avoidants reacted towards words to their own attachment worries, separation, loss, death, just as quickly as other people did. Distracted by another task, their ability to repress lessened, and their true attachment feelings and concerns were able to surface. The experiments show that although you may be avoidant, your attachment machinery is still in place, making you just as vulnerable to threats of separation. Only when your mental energy is needed elsewhere and you are caught off guard, however, do these emotions and feelings emerge. These studies also tell us that avoidants such as Susan aren't such free spirits after all. It is the defensive stance that they adopt that makes them seem that way. In Susan's account, notice how she makes a point of putting down those who depend on their significant others. Other studies have found that faced with a stressful life event, such as divorce, the birth of a severely disabled child, or military trauma, avoidance defenses are quick to break down, and they then appear and behave just like people with an anxious attachment style. Together, but apart. The compromise that satisfies no one. So, how do people with an avoidant attachment style suppress their attachment needs and maintain a distance in their relationships? Let's take a closer look at the various techniques they use to keep the distance from the person closest to them, from everyday deactivating strategies to overarching perceptions and beliefs. Mike, 27, has spent the last 5 years with someone that he feels is not his intellectual equal. They love each other very much, but there's always an underlying dissatisfaction in Mike's mind about the relationship. He has a lingering feeling that something is missing and that someone better is just around the corner. Kaya, 31, lives with her boyfriend of 2 years, but still reminisces about the freedom she enjoyed when she was single. She seems to have forgotten that, in actuality, she was very lonely and depressed on her own. Stavros, 40, a handsome and suave entrepreneur, desperately wants to get married and have kids. He knows exactly what he's looking for in a wife. She has to be young, no more than 28, good-looking, career-oriented, and no less important, she must be willing to move back with him to his hometown in Greece. After more than 10 years of dating, he still hasn't found her. Tom, 49. Married for decades to a woman he once worshipped, now feels trapped and seizes every possible opportunity to do things on his own, whether taking solo trips or attending events with male friends. All of these people have one thing in common, an avoidant attachment style. They feel a deep-rooted aloneness, even while in a relationship. Whereas people with a secure attachment style find it easy to accept their partners, flaws and all, to depend on them, and to believe that they're special and unique. For avoidant people, such a stance is a major life challenge. If you're avoidant, you connect with romantic partners but always maintain some mental distance and an escape route. Feeling close and complete with someone else, the emotional equivalent of finding a home, is a condition that you find difficult to accept. Deactivating strategies, your everyday toolkit for keeping your partner at arm's length or more. Although Mike, Kaya, Stavros, and Tom use different methods to disengage from their partners, they're all employing techniques known as deactivating strategies. A deactivating strategy is any behavior or thought that is used to squelch intimacy. These strategies suppress our attachment system, the biological mechanism in our brains responsible for our desire to seek closeness with a preferred partner. Remember the experiment in which researchers showed that avoidants have the need for closeness in a relationship but make a concerted effort to repress it? Deactivating strategies are the tools employed to suppress these needs on a day-to-day basis. Examine the following list of deactivating strategies carefully. The more you use these tools, the more alone you'll feel, and the less happy you'll be in your relationship. Some common deactivating strategies. Saying, or thinking, "I'm not ready to commit," but staying together nonetheless, sometimes for years. focusing on small imperfections in your partner, the way she or he talks, dresses, eats, or fill in the blank, and allowing it to get in the way of your romantic feelings. Pining after an ex-girlfriend or boyfriend, the phantom ex. More on this later. Flirting with others, a hurtful way to introduce insecurity into the relationship. Not saying, I love you, while implying that you do have feelings toward the other person. Pulling away when things are going well, for example, not calling for several days after an intimate date. Forming relationships with an impossible future, such as with someone who is married. Checking out mentally when your partner is talking to you. Keeping secrets and leaving things foggy to maintain your feeling of independence. Avoiding physical closeness, for example, not wanting to share the same bed, not wanting to have sex. Walking several strides ahead of your partner. If you're avoidant, these small, everyday deactivating strategies are tools you unconsciously use to make sure the person that you love, or will love, won't get in the way of your autonomy. But at the end of the day, these tools are standing in the way of you being happy in a relationship. The use of deactivating strategies alone is not enough to keep attachments at bay. They're just the tip of the iceberg. As an avoidant, your mind is governed by overarching perceptions and beliefs about relationships that ensure a disconnect with your partner and get in the way of your happiness. Thought patterns that leave you out in the cold. As an avoidant, you have a skewed perspective of the things that your partner says and does. The unnerving part is that you're almost entirely unconscious of these unconstructive thought patterns. Mistaking self-reliance for independence. Joe, 29. When I was growing up, my father constantly told me not to rely on anyone. He said it so many times it became a mantra in my head. You can only count on yourself. I never disputed its truth until I first went to therapy. Relationships? Who needs them? I told my shrink. Why would I waste my time being with someone when I can only count on myself? My therapist opened my eyes. That's nonsense, he said. Of course you can, and should, count on other people. You do it all the time anyway. We all do. It was one of those white light moments. I could see that he was right. What a huge relief it was to let go of such an obsessive notion that set me apart from the rest of the world. Joe's belief in self-reliance, and his experience of feeling alone because of it, isn't unique to him. Studies show that belief in self-reliance is very closely linked with a low degree of comfort with intimacy and closeness. Although avoidant individuals were found to have a great deal of confidence about not needing anyone else, their belief came with a price tag. They scored lowest on every measure of closeness in personal relationships. They were less willing to engage in self-disclosure, less comfortable with intimacy, and also less likely to seek help from others. As is evident in Joe's account, a strong belief in self-reliance can be more of a burden than an asset. In romantic relationships, it reduces your ability to be close, to share intimate information, and to be in tune with your partner. Many avoidants confuse self-reliance with independence. Even though it's important for each of us to be able to stand on our own two feet, if we overrate self-reliance, we diminish the importance of getting support from other people, thus cutting ourselves off from an important lifeline. Another problem with self-reliance is the self part. It forces you to ignore the needs of your partner and concentrate only on your own needs, shortchanging you of one of the most rewarding human experiences. It prevents you, and the person you love, from the joy of feeling part of something bigger than yourself. Seeing the worm instead of the apple. Another disabling thought pattern that makes you keep your partner at a distance is seeing the worm instead of the apple. Carol had been with Bob for 9 months and had been feeling increasingly unhappy. She felt Bob was the wrong guy for her, and gave a multitude of reasons. He wasn't her intellectual equal, he lacked sophistication, he was too needy, and she didn't like the way he dressed or interacted with people. Yet, at the same time, there was a tenderness about him that she'd never experienced with another man. He made her feel safe and accepted. He lavished gifts on her, and he had endless patience to deal with her silences, moods, and scorn. Still, Carol was adamant about her need to leave Bob. "It will never work," she said time and time again. Finally, she broke up with him. Months later, she was surprised by just how difficult she was finding things without him. Lonely, depressed, and heartbroken, she mourned their lost relationship as the best she'd ever had. Carol's experience is typical of people with an avoidant attachment style. They tend to see the glass half empty instead of half full when it comes to their partner. In fact, in one study, Mario Michelinzer, dean of the New School of Psychology at the Interdisciplinary Center in Israel and one of the leading researchers in the field of adult attachment, together with colleagues Victor Florian and Gilad Hirschberger from the Department of Psychology at Bar-Ilan University in Israel, asked couples to recount their daily experiences in a diary. They found that people with an avoidant attachment style rated their partner less positively than did non-avoidance. What's more, they found they did so even on days in which their accounts of their partner's behavior indicated supportiveness, warmth, and caring. Dr. Michelinzer explains that this pattern of behavior is driven by avoidance's generally dismissive attitude toward connectedness. When something occurs that contradicts this perspective, such as their spouse behaving in a genuinely caring and loving manner, they are prone to ignoring the behavior, or at least diminishing its value. When they were together, Carol used many deactivating strategies, tending to focus on Bob's negative attributes. Although she was aware of her boyfriend's strengths, she couldn't keep her mind off what she perceived to be his countless flaws. Only after they broke up, and she no longer felt threatened by the high level of intimacy, did her defense strategies lift. She was then able to get in touch with the underlying feelings of attachment that were there all along, and to accurately assess Bob's pluses. Caution. Read the signs. Imagine if you were a parent and couldn't for the life of you read your infant's cues. You wouldn't be able to tell whether your child was hungry or tired, wanting to be held or wanting to be left alone, wet or sick. How difficult life would be for both of you. Your child would have to work so much harder and cry so much longer to be understood. Having an avoidant attachment style can often make you feel like that parent. You're not strong at translating the many verbal and nonverbal signals you receive during everyday interactions into a coherent understanding of your lover's mental state. The problem is that, along with your self-reliant attitude, you also train yourself not to care about how the person closest to you is feeling. You figure that this is not your task, that they need to take care of their own emotional well-being. This lack of understanding leads partners of avoidance to complain about not receiving enough emotional support. It also leads to less connectedness, warmth, and satisfaction in the relationship. Dr. Jeffrey Simpson, professor of psychology at the University of Minnesota, studies how adult attachment orientations are associated with relationship functioning and well-being, particularly when partners are distressed. He also researches empathetic accuracy, the condition under which people tend to be accurate or inaccurate in gauging their partner's feelings. In a study conducted together with Steve Rolls from Texas A&M University, they set up an experiment to examine whether people with different attachment styles differed in their abilities to infer their partner's thoughts. They asked individuals to rate the attractiveness and sexual appeal of opposite-sex images in the presence of their partners. They then asked them to assess their partner's reactions to this rating process. avoidant individuals were found to be less accurate than anxious individuals in perceiving their partner's thoughts and feelings during the experiment. It was common for avoidants to interpret their partner's reaction as indifferent if they rated someone as highly attractive, when, in fact, their partner had been quite upset by it. John Gray, in his enormously popular book, Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, starts out by describing the aha moment that made him write the book. Several days after his wife Bonnie gave birth to their baby girl in a very painful delivery, John went back to work. All signs showed she was on the mend. He came home at the end of the day, only to discover that his wife had run out of painkillers and had consequently spent the whole day in pain taking care of a newborn. When he saw how upset she was, he misinterpreted her distress as anger and became very defensive, trying to plead his innocence. After all, he didn't know she had run out of pain pills. Why hadn't she called? After a heated exchange, he was about to stomp angrily out of the house when Bonnie stopped him. "Stop! Please don't leave," she said. "This is when I need you most. I'm in pain. I haven't slept in days. Please listen to me." At this point, John went over to her and silently held her. Later he says, "That day, for the first time, I didn't leave her. I succeeded in giving to her when she really needed me." This event, the stress and responsibility of having a newborn, and his wife's highly effective communication, helped to invoke a secure working model in John. It helped bring him to the realization that his wife's well-being is his responsibility and sacred duty. This was a true revelation for him. From someone who was busy looking out for his own needs and responding defensively to his partner's requests and dissatisfactions, he managed to shift to a more secure mindset. This is not an easy task if you have an avoidant attachment style, but it is possible if you allow yourself to open up enough to truly see your partner. Longing for the Phantom X, looking for the one. These are the two trickiest tools that you may be using to shortchange yourself in love. You convince yourself that you have a true longing for someone from your past, or that the right person is just around the corner, and you can easily undermine yourself in love. Embracing the notion of the perfect partner is one of the most powerful tools an avoidant can use to keep someone else at bay. It allows you to believe that everything is fine with you, and that the person you're with now is the problem. He or she is just not good enough. In addition to creating distance between you and your partner, it can also confuse him or her. When your partner hears how you miss your ex, or how you long for the perfect soulmate, it leads him or her to believe that you're craving true closeness and intimacy, when in fact you're driving it away. The Phantom X. One of the consequences of devaluing your romantic relationship is that you often wake up long after the relationship has gone stale, having forgotten all those negative things that annoyed you about your partner, wondering what went wrong, and reminiscing longingly about your long-lost love. We call it the Phantom X phenomenon. Often, as has happened with Carol, who rediscovered her feelings for Bob only after she'd broken up with him, once the avoidant person has put time and distance between herself and the partner whom she's lost interest in, something strange happens. The feelings of love and admiration return. Once at a safe distance, the threat of intimacy is gone and you no longer feel the need to suppress your true feelings. You can then recall all of your ex's great qualities, convincing yourself that he or she was the best partner you ever had. Of course, you can't articulate why this person wasn't right for you, or remember clearly why you ended things in the first place, or perhaps behaved so miserably that he or she had no choice but to leave. In essence, you put your past partner on a pedestal and pay tribute to the love of your life, now forever lost. Sometimes you do try to resume the relationship, starting a vicious cycle of getting closer and withdrawing. Other times, even if the other person is available, You don't make an attempt to get back together, but continue all the same to think about him or her incessantly. This fixation with a past partner affects budding new relationships because it acts as a deactivating strategy, blocking you from getting close to someone else. Even though you'll probably never get back together with your phantom ex, just the knowledge that they're out there is enough to make any new partner seem insignificant by comparison. The power of the one. Have you ever gone out with someone whom you think is amazing, but as you start to get closer, you become overwhelmed with the feeling that she or he isn't actually so hot after all? This can even happen after you've gone out with someone for a considerable amount of time, or very intensively, all the while believing that she or he is the one, when all of a sudden you experience a chilling effect. You start to notice she has a weird way of eating, or that his nose blowing infuriates you. You end up discovering that after the initial exhilaration, you feel suffocated and need to take a step back. What you don't realize is that this surge of negativity could in fact be a deactivating strategy, unconsciously triggered to turn off your attachment needs. Not wanting to look inward, and believing that we all have the same capacity for intimacy, you conclude that you're just not in love enough, and so pull away. Your partner is crushed and protests, but this only strengthens your conviction that she or he is not the one. Moving from one date to the next, you begin this vicious cycle over and over, believing all along that once you find the one, you'll effortlessly connect on a totally different level. Can avoidance change? As you listen to this chapter, it becomes apparent that being avoidant isn't really about living a self-sufficient life. It's about a life of struggle involving the constant suppression of a powerful attachment system using the, also powerful, deactivating strategies we've outlined. Because of their power, it's easy to conclude that these behaviors, thoughts, and beliefs are impossible to uproot and change. But, strictly speaking, this is not the case. What is true is that people with an avoidant attachment style overwhelmingly assume that the reason they're unable to find happiness is a relationship has little to do with themselves and a lot to do with external circumstances, meeting the wrong people, not finding the one, or only hooking up with prospects who want to tie them down. They rarely search inside themselves for the reason for their dissatisfaction, and even more rarely seek help or even agree to get help when their partner suggests they do so. Unfortunately, until they look inward or seek counseling, change is not likely to occur. On occasions when avoidants reach a low point in their life, because of severe loneliness, a life-altering experience, or a major accident, they can change their way of thinking. For those of you who have reached that point, take note of the following 8 actions that will get you one step closer to true intimacy. Most of these steps require, first and foremost, increasing your self-awareness. But knowing about the thought patterns that deny you the ability to truly get close to someone is only the first step. The next, and harder step, requires you to start to identify instances in which you employ these attitudes and behaviors, and then to embark on the voyage of change. Coaching session. 8 things you can start doing today to stop pushing love away. 1. Learn to identify deactivating strategies. Don't act on your impulse. When you're excited about someone but then suddenly have a gut feeling that she or he is not right for you, stop and think. Is this actually a deactivating strategy? Are all those small imperfections you're starting to notice really your attachment system's way of making you step back? Remind yourself that this picture is skewed and that you need intimacy despite your discomfort with it. If you thought she or he was great to begin with, you have a lot to lose by pushing him or her away. 2. De-emphasize self-reliance and focus on mutual support. When your partner feels she or he has a secure base to fall back on, and doesn't feel the need to work hard to get close. And when you don't feel the need to distance yourself, you'll both be better able to look outward and do your own thing. You'll become more independent, and your partner will be less needy. Hear more on the dependency paradox in Chapter 2. 3. Find a secure partner. As you will hear in Chapter 7, people with secure attachment styles tend to make their anxious and avoidant partners more secure as well. Someone with an anxious attachment style, however, will exacerbate your avoidance, often in a perpetual vicious cycle. Given a chance, we recommend you choose the secure route. You'll experience less defensiveness, less fighting, and less anguish. 4. Be aware of your tendency to misinterpret behaviors. Negative views of your partner's behaviors and intentions infuse bad vibes into the relationship. Change this pattern. Recognize this tendency, notice when it happens, and look for a more plausible perspective. Remind yourself that this is your partner. You chose to be together, and maybe you're better off trusting that they do have your best interests at heart. 5. Make a relationship gratitude list. Remind yourself on a daily basis that you tend to think negatively of your partner or date. It is simply part of your makeup if you have an avoidant attachment style. Your objective should be to notice the positive in your partner's actions. This may not be an easy task, but with practice and perseverance, you'll gradually get the hang of it. Take time every evening to think back on the events of the day. List at least one way your partner contributed, even in a minor way, to your well-being, and why you're grateful they're in your life. 6. Nix the Phantom X. When you find yourself idealizing that one special ex-partner, stop and acknowledge that he or she is not, and never was, a viable option. By remembering how critical you were of that relationship and how leery you were of committing, you can stop using him or her as a deactivating strategy and focus on someone new. 7. Forget about the one. We don't dispute the presence of soulmates in our world. On the contrary, we wholeheartedly believe in the soulmate experience, but it is our belief that you have to be an active party in the process. Don't wait until the one who fits your checklist shows up and then expect everything to fall in place. Make them your soulmate by choosing them out of the crowd, allowing them to get close, using the strategies we offer in this chapter, and making them a special part of you. 8. Adopt the distraction strategy. As an avoidant, it's easier to get close to your partner if there's a distraction. Remember the experiment with a distraction task. Focusing on other things, taking a hike, going sailing, or preparing a meal together will allow you to let your guard down and make it easier to access your loving feelings. Use this little trick to promote closeness in your time together. For additional avoidance-busting tips, listen to Chapter 8. Chapter 7. Getting Comfortably Close. The Secure Attachment Style. Writing about people with a secure attachment style seems like a boring task. After all, what is there to say? If you're secure, you're very reliable, consistent, and trustworthy. You don't try to dodge intimacy or go nuts over your relationships. There's very little drama in your romantic ties. No highs and lows, no yo-yos and roller coasters to speak of. So, what is there to say? Actually, there's a lot to say. In the process of understanding attachments and how a secure bond can transform someone's life, we've grown to admire and appreciate the secures of the world. They're attuned to their partner's emotional and physical cues and know how to respond to them. Their emotional system doesn't get too riled up in the face of threat, as with the anxious, but doesn't get shut down either, as with the avoidant. In this chapter, you'll learn more about the secure traits and what makes them unique. And, If you're secure and don't usually seek help in the relationship arena, you'll be forewarned because you too may one day stumble into an ineffective relationship that can affect you in a deleterious way. The secure buffering effect. Time and time again, research shows that the best predictor of happiness in a relationship is a secure attachment style. Studies demonstrate that individuals with a secure attachment style report higher levels of satisfaction in their relationships than people with other attachment styles. Patrick Keelan, as part of his doctoral dissertation at the University of Toronto, conducted a study to test this issue. Together with the late psychology professor Kenneth Dion and his longtime research partner and wife, Karen Dion, a psychology professor at the University of Toronto, they followed over 100 university students who were in dating relationships over a 4-month period. They found that secure individuals maintained high levels of relationship satisfaction, commitment, and trust. In contrast, insecure individuals reported decreasing levels of all three over the same 4 months. But what happens when secure and insecure interact? In a separate experiment, researchers got observers to rate couples functioning during a joint interaction. It's no surprise that secure couples, those in which both partners were secure, functioned better than insecure couples, those in which both partners were either anxious or avoidant. But what was more interesting was that there was no observed difference between secure couples and mixed couples, those with only one secure partner. They both showed less conflict and were rated as better functioning than were the insecure dyads. So not only do people with a secure attachment style fare better in relationships, they also create a buffering effect, somehow managing to raise their insecure partner's relationship satisfaction and functioning to their own high level. This is a very important finding. It means that if you're with someone secure, they nurture you into a more secure stance. Tell me, is it magic? What is it about people with a secure attachment style that creates this magical effect on their relationships? Are secures always the most friendly, likable, or sociable people around? Can you recognize them on the basis of their charm, composure, or self-confidence? The answer to all these questions is no. As with the other attachment styles, personality or physical traits won't give secures away. Secure people fit almost every description across the personality spectrum. Aaron, 30, a chemical engineer, is an introvert with a strong dislike of social events. He spends most of his free time working, reading, or with his brothers and parents, and finds it hard to make new connections. He had his first sexual experience 2 years ago. Brenda, 27, a movie producer, acts as a social hub, knows everyone, and is always where the action is. She had one serious boyfriend from age 18 to 24, and has been seeing other people ever since. Gregory, 50, an electrical engineer and divorced father of two, is very outgoing and easy to get along with. He's still licking his wounds from his failed marriage and is on the lookout for wife number two. Secures come in every possible shape, size, and form. Something else distinguishes them that is harder to recognize, at least at first. Janet, 41, experienced that something firsthand. Overwhelmed by the amount of work she'd left unfinished before the weekend, Janet woke up Monday morning in a state of dread. She was convinced that there was no way she'd ever get through the enormous pile on her desk, and her situation made her feel incompetent. She turned to her husband, Stan, who was lying in bed beside her, and, out of nowhere, told him how disappointed she was with his business's progress, and how worried she was that he wasn't going to make it. Stan was taken aback, but responded to Janet's attack without any visible trace of animosity. "I understand that you're frightened, and there might be some comfort for you if I feel frightened, too. But if you're trying to encourage me to be more efficient at work, which you often do, this isn't the best way to do it." Janet was dumbfounded. She knew he was right, that she'd been expressing only her own concerns. Seeing that she was tearful, Stan offered to drive her to work. In the car, she apologized. She hadn't meant the stuff she'd said, but was in such an emotional funk that everything seemed dreary to her. It was then that she realized what a wonderfully supportive husband Stan was. If he had attacked her out of the blue, she'd have struck back and World War III would have broken out. She wouldn't have stayed collected enough to see what was really going on, to understand that it wasn't about her, but about him. Stan's ability to handle the situation in the way he did required a real emotional gift. "I have to remember how good it feels to be on the receiving end of that, and offer some in return someday," she thought to herself. When threat goes undetected. People with a secure attachment style, like Stan, are characterized by something very real but not outwardly visible. They are programmed to expect their partners to be loving and responsive, and don't worry much about losing their partner's love. They feel extremely comfortable with intimacy and closeness, and have an uncanny ability to communicate their needs and respond to their partner's needs. In fact, a series of studies aimed at accessing subjects' unconscious minds, by measuring how long it takes them to report words that flash quickly on a monitor, as described in Chapter 6, compared the reactions of people with anxious, avoidant, and secure attachment styles. The studies found that secures have more unconscious access to themes such as love, hugs, and closeness, and less access to danger, loss, and separation. The negative, threatening themes didn't get through to them as easily. However, unlike avoidants, who didn't react to these words initially but did react to them when they were distracted by another task, secures continued to overlook them even in the distraction condition. Unlike people with an avoidant attachment style, secures aren't concerned with threatening relationship thoughts, even when they are caught off guard. In other words, they don't have to make an effort to repress these ideas. They simply aren't worried about these issues, either consciously or subconsciously. What's more, when secures were specifically, and in this experiment consciously, asked to think about separation, abandonment, and loss, they succeeded in doing so and did not become more nervous as a result, as measured by skin conductance tests, which measure the amount of sweat on the skin. Remarkably, though, when they were told to stop thinking about these topics, their skin conductance abruptly went back to normal. So it seems that what may come as hard work for some, to keep an even emotional keel in the face of threat, comes effortlessly for someone else. They simply aren't as sensitive to the negative cues of the world. This stance influences every aspect of their romantic relationships. They are great conflict busters. During a fight, they don't feel the need to act defensively or to injure or punish their partner, and so prevent the situation from escalating. Mentally flexible. They are not threatened by criticism. They're willing to reconsider their ways and, if necessary, revise their beliefs and strategies. Effective communicators. They expect others to be understanding and responsive, so expressing their feelings freely and accurately to their partners comes naturally to them. Not game players. They want closeness and believe others want the same, so why play games? Comfortable with closeness, unconcerned about boundaries. They seek intimacy and aren't afraid of being enmeshed. Because they aren't overwhelmed by a fear of being slighted, as are the anxious, or the need to deactivate, as are the avoidants, they find it easy to enjoy closeness, whether physical or emotional. Quick to forgive. They assume their partner's intentions are good, and therefore likely to forgive them when they do something hurtful. Inclined to view sex and emotional intimacy as one. They don't need to create distance by separating the two, by being close either emotionally or sexually, but not both. Treat their partners like royalty. When you've become part of their inner circle They treat you with love and respect. Secure in their power to improve the relationship. They are confident in their positive beliefs about themselves and others, which makes this assumption logical. Responsible for their partner's well-being. They expect others to be responsive and loving toward them, and so are responsive to others' needs. Many people who live with insecure partners cannot even begin to imagine how fundamentally different life with a secure person can be. For starters, they don't engage in the relationship dance that therapists often refer to, whereby one partner gets closer while the other steps back in order to maintain a certain distance in the relationship at all times. Instead, there's a feeling of growing closeness and intimacy. Second, they are able to sensitively and emphatically, and most important, coherently, discuss their emotions with you. Last, the secure party engulfs his or her partner in an emotionally protective shield that makes facing the outside world an easier task. We often fail to realize what a bonus these attributes are unless they're missing. It's no coincidence that the people most appreciative of a secure relationship are those who've had relationships with both secure and insecure partners. Though these people will tell you that secure and insecure relationship are worlds apart, without the knowledge of attachment theory, they too are unable to put their finger on what exactly that difference is. Where does this talent come from? If you are secure, are you born with this exceptional capacity, or is it something you learn along the way? John Bowlby believed that attachment styles are a function of life experience, especially of our interaction with our parents during infancy. A person will develop a secure attachment style if her parents are sensitive and responsive to her needs. Such a child will learn that she can rely on her parents, confident that they'll be available to her whenever she needs them. But Bowlby maintained that it didn't end there. He believed a secure child would carry this confidence into adulthood and future relationships with romantic partners. Does the evidence support these predictions? In 2000, Leslie Atkinson, who conducts child development research at Ryerson University in Toronto, in collaboration with several other colleagues, conducted a meta-analysis that was based on 41 prior studies. In total, the study analyzed over 2,000 parent-child pairs to evaluate the connections between parent sensitivity and child attachment style. The results showed a weak but significant link between the two. Children of mothers who were sensitive to their needs were more likely to have a secure attachment style, but the weak link means that, aside from methodological issues, there could be many other variables that come into play to determine a child's attachment style. Among the factors that were found to increase a child's chance of being secure were an easy temperament, which makes it easier for parents to be responsive, positive maternal conditions, marital satisfaction, low stress and depression, and social support, and fewer hours with a non-parental caretaker. To complicate matters further, an idea that has been gaining scientific momentum in recent years is that we are genetically predisposed toward a certain attachment style. It was found, for example, that adult identical twins who share 100% of genes are much more likely to have the same attachment style than non-identical twins who share only 50% of genes. Both identical and fraternal twins are thought to share the same basic environment. In other words, genes too play an important role in determining our attachment style. But even if we were secure in infancy, will it last into adulthood? To test this question, attachment researchers reassessed subjects who had been infants in the 1970s and 1980s and were now around 20 years old. Would the men and women classified as secure in early childhood remain secure as adults? The answer remains unclear. Three studies failed to find a correlation between attachment security in infancy and adulthood, while two other studies did find a statistically significant connection between the two. What is clear is that even if there is a correlation between attachment style in childhood and in adulthood, it is weak at best. So where does the secure attachment come from? As more studies become available, there is increasing evidence that a secure attachment style doesn't originate from a single source. The equation of a caring and sensitive parent producing a secure-for-life child is too one-dimensional. Instead, it seems that an entire mosaic of factors comes together to create this attachment pattern. Our early connection with our parents, our genes, and also something else, our romantic experiences as adults. On average, about 70 to 75% of adults remain consistently in the same attachment category at different points in their lives, while the remaining 30 to 25% of the population report a change in their attachment style. Researchers attribute this change to romantic relationships in adulthood that are so powerful that they actually revise our most basic beliefs and attitudes toward connectedness. And yes, that change can happen in both directions. Secure people can become less secure, and people who were originally insecure can become increasingly secure. If you are insecure, this piece of information is vital and could be your ticket to happiness in relationships. If you are secure, you should be aware of this finding because you have a lot to lose by becoming less secure. Tapping into the secure mindset, creating a secure base for your partner. As you recall, one of the most important roles we play in our partners' lives is providing a secure base, creating the conditions that enable our partners to pursue their interests and explore the world in confidence. Brooke Feeney and Roxanne Thrush of Carnegie Mellon University, in a study published in 2010, found that three specific behaviors underlie this broad term. You too can provide a secure base by adopting the following secure behaviors. Be available. Respond sensitively to their distress. Allow them to be dependent on you when they feel the need. Check in with them from time to time and provide comfort when things go wrong. Don't interfere. Provide behind-the-scenes support for their endeavors. Help in a way that leaves them with the initiative and feeling of power. Allow them to do their own thing without trying to take over the situation, micromanage, or undermine their confidence and abilities. Encourage. Provide encouragement and be accepting of their learning and personal growth goals. Boost their self-esteem. It's not me, it's you. Choosing a partner. If you have a secure attachment style, you know how to sidestep many of the obstacles that people with other attachment styles have difficulty dealing with. You naturally gravitate toward those with the capacity to make you happy. Unlike the anxious, you don't let an activated attachment system distract you. You aren't addicted to the highs and lows of being with someone who keeps you guessing all the time. Unlike avoidance, you aren't diverted by false fantasies of the perfect person waiting for you, or the one that got away. And you don't unconsciously employ deactivating strategies that cause you to get cold feet when someone starts to get close. As a secure, the opposite is true of you. You believe that there are many potential partners open to intimacy and closeness who would be responsive to your needs. You know you deserve to be loved and valued at all times. You are programmed to expect that. If someone sends out vibes that are not in line with these expectations, if they're inconsistent or evasive, you automatically lose interest. Tanya, 28, a secure woman we interviewed, put it very simply. I've slept with 11 guys in my life, and they've all wanted to have a serious relationship with me. I guess it's something I convey. I know that I get the message across that I'm someone who's worth getting to know, not just in bed, that if they stick around, there's a treasure to be revealed. The guys I show interest in don't play games. That is very important to me. They call immediately the next day, or at the very latest, the next evening. In return, right from the start, I show them that I'm interested. There were only two men in my life that waited 2 days to call, and I screened them both out immediately. Notice that Tanya wastes no time at all on men she perceives as not being responsive enough to her needs. To some, her decisions might seem rash, but for secure people, such behavior comes naturally. Studies in the field of attachment have confirmed that subjects with a more secure attachment style are indeed less likely to play games. Tanya knows intuitively which partners are wrong for her. Game playing is a deal breaker as far as she's concerned. The important thing about her approach is that Tanya assumes that if her partner treats her disrespectfully, it's indicative of his inability to be responsive in a relationship, and not of her own worth. She also doesn't have too many negative feelings about those two men. It's just a non-issue for her, and she instinctively moves on. This is very different from someone anxious who would probably assume that she was to blame for her date's actions. She might start to second-guess her own behavior. I must have come on too strong. I should have invited him up. Or, it was so stupid to talk about his ex. Giving the wrong people a second, third, and fourth chance. In Tanya's case, she'd seen enough to find it pointless to move forward with men she could tell were unable to meet her emotional needs. But in case of doubt, one of the tools most frequently used by people with a secure attachment style is effective communication. They simply surface their feelings and see how their date reacts. If their partner shows true concern for their well-being and a willingness to find a middle ground, they'll give the relationship a chance. If not, they won't stick around to fight what they believe to be a losing battle. Listen to chapter 11. Finding the right partner, the secure way. The principles we advocate throughout this audiobook for finding the right partner are employed intuitively by people with a secure attachment style. These include spotting smoking guns very early on and treating them as deal breakers, effectively communicating your needs from day one, subscribing to the belief that there are many, yes, many, potential partners who could make you happy, never taking blame for a date's offensive behavior. When a partner acts inconsiderately or hurtfully, secures acknowledge that it says a lot about the other person rather than about themselves. Expecting to be treated with respect, dignity, and love. Does this mean that secures are immune to relationship problems? Secure people don't always hook up with one another. They date and marry people of all three attachment styles. The good news is that if you're secure, you have the potential to get along with people who have anxious or avoidant attachment styles, but only if you are able to maintain your secure frame of mind. If you find yourself becoming less secure, not only do you lose a priceless gift, but you also experience less happiness and satisfaction in your relationships. If you're secure, one of the reasons you're able to maintain a satisfying relationship with someone who has an insecure attachment style is because he or she will gradually become more secure as a result of being with you. When you date someone anxious, this is most often what happens. One of the things that Mary Ainsworth observed in her mother-infant relationship was that secure mothers were a special breed. It's not that they tended more to their children or held them more than mothers of anxious or avoidant children, but they seemed to possess a kind of sixth sense and intuitively knew when the child wanted to be held. They sensed their child's emerging distress and acted on it before it turned into a full-blown fit. And if the child did get distressed, they just seemed to know how to soothe her. We find this phenomenon in adult couples, too. Secure adults naturally know how to soothe their partners and take care of them. It's an innate talent. This can be seen in the couple's transition to parenthood. Jeffrey Simpson from the University of Minnesota and Stephen Rowles from Texas A&M University, co-editors of the book Attachment Theory and Close Relationships, together with Lorna Campbell and Carol Wilson, found that during the shift into parenthood, Anxiously attached women were more likely to move toward security in their interactions with their partners if they perceived their spouses as available, supportive, and accepting during pregnancy. All secure traits.